open up the Senate Revenue Committee for the day after Groundhog's Day, the 3rd of February, which is a Thursday. So committee in front of you see our plan for next week, which has us starting at the 8:30 time. As we get busier and have talked about this, we're going to go to our original time of 8:30 so that we don't do what we did yesterday, which is bump right up against session and people's 10:30 meetings. What we're going to do today is first we're going to go into a work session, though we won't pass out a bill. But what we want to do is go into work session, introduce a vehicle which relates to tax compliance, really following up on the work that we've done. There's more work to be done, but to allow the committee to get into a better discussion of all the issues that we've come across in the last 2 days, and have a committee discussion with Mr. Warner and Ms. Buchanan and Mr. Johnson from Legislative Council. Following that committee discussion, we'll probably just go right out of work session. We would like to introduce a couple of committee bills while we're in work session, and then we'll do our public hearing and possible work session on Senate Bill 31, 32, and 33. So for folks who are here on Senate Bill 31 through 33, that will probably come, I would guess, in about 30 or 40 minutes after we've worked through the compliance and collection issues that have come up over the last couple days. With that, I will open a work session on what's our LC vehicle, Paul?
Mr. Chair, you have three LCs before you for possible introduction. And you've got a summary of those. The first is LC 1281. This would establish a tax credit, a corporate and personal income tax credit, for property taxes paid on machinery and equipment in the food processing industry. And that is at the request of the Oregon Food Processors Council. There's LC 69, which deals with the senior deferral property tax program and proposes adjustments in the way the interest rate is calculated, the current 6% interest rate for a payment of taxes over time. And that will be, that's a blank in the bill right now. That's at the request of Don Devine. And then the last LC is the one the chair is referring to, and that is LC 2364. Currently, that is a kind of a general tax amnesty program that really isn't based on any specific discussion with any of you, but it's designed to be the vehicle the chair spoke of as a tax compliance or potentially an amnesty program, whichever direction you want to go. But it's relating to tax compliance. So it can be, once that bill is introduced and comes back to the committee, then you can amend it in any way you'd like and relating to tax compliance, and that will become the bill that you, or the vehicle for you to work with.
Thank you. So should we do the three, introduce the three, and work on the last one committee, which would be LC 2364?
You'll need a motion, Mr. Chair. That in the motion, you should include these.
The names. Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Starr.
I would move that we introduce as committee bills LC 1281 at the request of the Oregon Food Processors Council, LC 69, request of Don Devine, LC 2364 at the request of the Senate Revenue Committee.
Thank you. Vice Chair Starr has moved that we introduce as committee bills LC 1281 at the request of the Oregon Food Processors Council, LC 69 at the request of Don Devine, and LC 2364, which is at the request of the Senate Revenue Committee. Discussion. Any objections to Senator Starr's motion? So ordered. Paul.
Mr. Chair, in following up on the discussion of LC 2364 and kind of the elements that the committee will be discussing on that LC. I have an outline for you that you're really just trying to lay out some of the considerations for a tax amnesty program, where I would include the voluntary compliance initiative that you've heard about in the last couple of weeks, the California example, in this as well. And this would be similar to the concept and the bill that was introduced by Representative McPherson. But that one-page outline there is just called Bill Introduction, Committee Tax Compliance Bill Considerations for an Amnesty or Voluntary Compliance Initiative Program. These are the considerations in which any of these types of programs would need to have. Some of these you may not feel should be incorporated. Others you do. These are just really kind of a listing of decision points for you. The first issue is who is eligible for the program. The first choice, obviously, between corporate and personal. We don't have the sales tax issue, which other states will deal with. In most cases, because of the interconnectedness of the corporate and personal income tax, these would be wound together as a part of the same program, with distinctions necessary in the bill between the two laws. The other issues to look at, recall some of the who was eligible under California's current amnesty program. The non-filers is really the group out there you're probably most trying to get at, and that's the group where potentially you have the largest amount of revenue, but also probably the toughest to get at. Mm-hmm. Because that's where I think you really need to think in terms of the carrots and sticks, and is there the right combination to draw those folks out? And yet, you also heard testimony yesterday about drawing those folks out, but yet not creating the impression that they've gotten away with something. So it's a delicate balance. Another group there would be those who have filed, but who have underreported income or overstated deductions, and therefore would file an amended return during an amnesty period, in which they would come forth and provide properly documented deductions. Another issue that's a tricky one we talked about yesterday also is those that are currently under assessment from Department of Revenue. So they would be, there are people that are in the system that the department knows about, maybe working with, or maybe even some people who, as you heard yesterday, after a year, those delinquent payments would end up going over to private collection agencies. So that would be a group to think about. A couple of things there. One is the issue of, are you just accelerating payments that you already know about and will eventually come in? Or are you creating enough of a reduction in the burden there that you'll draw money in that you'll never actually end up getting? So there's some considerations there as to include them. Certainly, if you look at kind of final dollars and the revenue impact estimate we would make on something like this would be dependent on this group. If we had this group included in the program, we'd certainly raise those estimates. Mm-hmm. So you get kind of an inflated estimate in terms of the actual bill itself if you include this group. But there is also good reasons perhaps why you may want to in terms of that speeding up process. The other issue I've kind of lumped together is the separate program as it was introduced in California for the abusive tax shelters. And again, a good bill to look at is 2486 from Representative McPherson that he referred to yesterday. That defines what those abusive tax shelters are, really related a lot to the IRS code, the listed transactions that the IRS has labeled. So you've got a good model to work with from there. And that's a good start. You could also include other specific transactions and incorporate those into this program. You could, and in fact my advice would be, if there was to be an amnesty program, that it not be done the California way, where you have the Voluntary Compliance Initiative first and then amnesty second, but rather those together, because I think they're going to have some problems in terms of some gray area where People are uncertain whether they have an actual abusive tax shelter, and they're going to get nailed when they come forward on amnesty. And so it may be more efficient to combine those in some form.
So your fear on that is that they feel that the individual can feel like they could get hit twice, both with the they come forward, participate in the amnesty or the voluntary compliance initiative, and then a year later, the rules that they were abiding by, perhaps had changed on them or a new program was introduced.
Well, my concern on the way California set it up, Mr. Chair, is that people that have been deemed to participate in these abusive tax shelters are not eligible for amnesty. So they would come forward saying, I'm applying for amnesty, and then the department, the Franchise Tax Board, would say, no, you're not eligible because you should have filed this under the VCI program, which is already over.
I see.
So you missed your chance, in effect, and you've come forward, and basically you don't get the penalties and interest waived, and you end up
and the window is shut on you at that point.
Right. So that may be something to talk about. One of the things I think that would be helpful for the committee and certainly for us and staff would be to have some expert testimony. We've got our IRS folks, retired folks that have talked to you yesterday, but to have a good further discussion on these tax shelters and exactly what they are and further examples of that, and we can look at some of these listed transactions and get a good feel for maybe where some of those areas are, where they're clearly defined in some of those areas where they may not be.
Well, why don't we stay with that category? So, Senator Brzezinski, where we're at is we have introduced two committee bills just for introduction, and then we're working on LC 2364 just as a committee discussion. It's our vehicle for the whole compliance process. What we're going to do today is just have a committee discussion on the different categories that Mr. Warner is going through, get a sense, and we have Dexter Johnson. Maybe we'll have Dexter and Deborah Buchanan come up and help walk us through the choices we have and the options that we have on all of these. But we'll stick in Category 1 for now, just, and then we'll move on to what tax year should be included, if any. So it sounds, Paul, the first question we would have is corporate and personal, or just do personal, individual, or none?
Correct. And then those would be grouped. There are some other issues here, too, which I think would tend to be ones that would be naturally part of the administration system, but, for example, non-residents. I think you want to include non-residents in that as well because they're part of the filing system. But those are things you could make decisions over and narrow it down more. But I think in the case of the I think probably the two that would involve the most policy discussion and options would be the current assessment issue we've talked about and the abusive tax shelter and how you set up that and what you would define as abusive tax shelters and would you, you know, how narrowly you define that or whether you try to make that a broader definition.
Mm-hmm. Ms. Buchanan, do you have thoughts on the department's perspective on, I guess, those first few questions of do you include non-filers? Do you include both the corporate and the personal? And the third category, which is folks who have underreported or overstated their deductions, who I would assume we're getting from their federal tax returns.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Deborah Buchanan, Department of Revenue. Mr. Chair, most of those are policy questions. I think from an administrative standpoint, the simpler you make the category, the better it would be for us. So if you want to include corporate filers, it would be corporate excise tax filers. It would not include, for example, corporations that maybe didn't pay the withholding deposits that they should have. That would be a different program. And I think the bill clearly says it's the corporate tax, not just a corporate taxpayer. So that is good. Individual income tax, Paul talked about non-residents. That would probably add a little bit of complexity if you want to treat them differently than you're treating everybody else, because then you have the question, are they a non-resident? Were they a resident? You have to try to figure out that question first before you determine whether they qualify. So keeping it just individual income tax is probably simpler from an administrative standpoint.
Keeping it resident?
No.
Keeping it just individual filers,
individual.
Whether they are resident, non-resident, or partner resident.
I see. Okay.
The draft does just deal with those who have not filed or those who filed and underreported, but we haven't found them. So we're not looking at those that are in the accounts receivable now because we have issued a billing. That's a policy question for you. So either way, I think from an administrative standpoint, it would be.
So, yeah, Senator Brzezinski.
Regarding that group, do we know how many people we, let's say, are in the system that we've already billed or we would be billing them? What type of obligations there? Because it just seems to me that if they're already identified, why should they be, per se, getting the amnesty, or at least maybe to the level that we're talking about? Maybe mm-hmm. it's a two-tier system that you give them some break to come forward and keeps the department from going through the exercise of collecting mm-hmm. as compared to those who we know nothing about that come forward voluntarily.
Mm-hmm. The only difficulty for me in listening to the testimony the past 2 days on that is, so you have someone who the department has been in contact with. All of a sudden, the state rolls out, California started it yesterday, say we started it in June, a voluntary compliance initiative and an amnesty program if we went that route. I don't know what the perspective of that person who's in the system already would be of, well, I'm working with you, yet these folks who aren't working with you now have this amnesty program available to them. Where's the mm-hmm. fairness for me of, I'm just trying to set up a payment plan, or I've been in conversations with you, I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing, and these other folks are having some penalties waived and having some interest waived. And I don't know. That was, for me, the question is, mm-hmm. It seems to me perhaps you have to give us a carrot also to that person who is doing what we'd ask them to do, which is to kind of participate.
Well, Mr. Chair, that's a good point. As Paul pointed out yesterday, you also have the people who've been filing all the time and paying the tax as it's supposed to be paid, who receive nothing from this except the knowledge that other people that weren't paying are able to take advantage of a period of time to have penalties waived. And you did say a stick afterwards is, at least I think I heard this, maybe I didn't, but the penalties afterwards are maybe looked at by the ordinary taxpayer as something that is kind of balancing that gift that you've given them. But there is that concern, and I remember last session when there was talk about an amnesty, we had calls coming in from taxpayers saying, well, when are you going to do the amnesty, because I need to file and I'm just going to wait until you do that and avoid that penalty. It's a very difficult balance to try to find.
Mr. Chair, Dexter Johnson, Legislative Council Office. Perhaps an issue you could consider is whether the people that have that are already in the program but who came voluntarily into the program could be treated as if could be eligible for the amnesty program, but the people who are in the program because the department discovered them would not be eligible. That would be another option. I don't know whether the department has the capability to make that, to distinguish those two groups.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, we might be able to do that, depending on how you defined those two categories of people. Those that we have to track down and really pressure to file, we generally send out what's called a notice of determination and assessment. We look at the information that we have available. We determine what their tax is, and we assess the tax. I'm thinking those would be the people that would not get the bonus, if you will. But those where we had just issued a billing because we did an audit and then they set up an installment plan and they're making payments on that, that would be, I'm thinking, the other category of people. So those people don't get a notice of determination and assessment. They get a notice of deficiencies. I think we would be able to administer those as two different groups if you chose to go that way.
Okay, that's an interesting. Senator Brzezinski.
Hearing the discussion stuff, I'm wondering if if we wouldn't want the people who we're talking about that are not known to the agency, instead of giving an outright amnesty with no penalty, maybe there's a advertisement that if you come in and file, this is what we're going to set it at, some type of penalty, with the understanding that if they don't come in, then they're going to have the stick or the hammer.
Mm.
So there is actual, trying to get that balance between these other groups.
Mm-hmm.
They're not going to get off, quote unquote, scot-free. There's going to be some base level, but it's going to be a heck of a lot less if they do it now versus waiting for some other time to come through. And I mean, by having that date and knowing that you get the information out for those people to make that decision, they could say, well, you know, I can run the risk, but if I get caught, and I mean, it's kind of like what we're doing now, but at least we're not giving them a full benefit of a no assessment that everyone else that's played by the rules was already, you know, complying with.
Mr. Chair, you know, I think in where Senator Brzezinski is going with this, I mean, you can look at the sticks that we have listed there, and you really have two main ones, penalties and interest. And so you can vary that according to certain categories. You can waive, and a number of programs will waive penalties but not interest. So if you have some back taxes, you're still obligated for the interest.
Mm-hmm.
You can vary it that way between your two groups.
Senator George.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. How much discretion do you currently have? I mean, you can obviously set up a payment plan, but if you take a look and you think, you know what, we're probably at risk of collecting this. The person's financial condition may not be that good at this time, may have been better in the past. Do you have discretion to adjust penalties and interest based on the circumstances of that individual at this time?
Mr. Chair, Senator George, we do have authority under the statute now to waive any part of penalty and interest that are imposed on a finding of good and sufficient cause. And actually, you're taking my testimony from one of these bills, but I would talk to that later as well. So we do have the authority now, and in fact, we do have some administrative rules that address people who have not filed on time that provide for waiver of part of the penalty if they come forward voluntarily and file, and we don't have to actually go out and track them down and do the assessment. So that is a rule now. We generally don't waive interest unless the taxpayer didn't have use of the money. So interest waivers are pretty rare. But on a finding of good and sufficient cause, we can waive that penalty now. Tax is another matter. You didn't ask about tax, but we do have the ability to look at settlement offers dealing with the ability to pay.
Chair, notice that one of the possible sticks I listed there would be elimination of that discretion, perhaps for a period of time, to send a message that if you haven't participated in this program, don't look to DOR to negotiate mm-hmm. your penalty yeah. afterwards. So mm-hmm. that might be more of a kind of sending a message rather than an actual practical element.
Yes, Senator George.
That would make sense to me. Is first of all, advertise that these things are available to you in addition to this program. In other words, if you're in the system now, you could. There are things you could do, but if you don't do it by a given amount of time, then the stick is going to be applied, and you're going to be obligated for all of it. And you know, that's going to smoke out a few that are going to try to play the system, as Senator Brzezinski was talking about.
Mr. Chair.
Just one. So to me. It is balance of it's the combo of what Senator Jordan and Senator Brzezinski said of, because you're creating a new system, you probably want to take away, Ms. Buchanan, all the DOR discretion for a period of time so that the rules are in place. But here is the carrots and here is the stick, and you won't have that discretionary time. You really will have a system for a certain period of time, and then we'll go back to the rules as they've always have been. But for this period of time, if we go in the amnesty compliance initiative route, and perhaps you do it with, I like the idea of two tiers, of one of kind of the lower interest, lower penalties for folks that are new to the system that we're inviting in, who we don't know about, but also giving, and Senator Brzezinski and Senator George, make sure I get this right, because Dexter's writing, the second is for those folks that are in the system, giving them at least the same type of choices
as we're getting these folks who we didn't know about mm-hmm. who are coming into the system committee today.
Yeah, I think that's what I heard Senator Decker was, is what I think I was trying to express based on Paul's on the two-tier, because there needs to be something for those that are coming in that they're going to get something on the front end, but it's not going to be as significant as if they were not voluntarily coming in, but understand there is a sanction because they weren't in compliance.
Mm-hmm. And it could be an enticement. I mean, I would think it would be an enticement to that person who is working with the department, but having a tough time. This could also be an enticement for them to really, this is the time for them to get into full compliance and back into their regular mode of operation. Senator George.
Let me just tell a little story here. You know, one of Gary's stories. I had a young man that worked for me many years ago, and very, very talented, and we started making money, and so I started sharing the profits with him, you know, because of the fact that he had been such a key part of me making money. And so, you know, I gave him a bonus of a pickup one time, and he got a bunch of things like that. Then all of a sudden we found out that he hadn't been filing, but in that period of time he had married and had a young one, and they were spending basically every dollar they had. He had a tremendous tax liability with the absolute inability to pay it, and they came to, this time our IRS came and said, well, we're going to garnish his wages, and it was like impossible for them to actually feed their family. And to me, because he had not filed and he was new into the system, he really didn't even understand what he had done. There should be some special category for that person that we're bringing in, the first-time filer who may be in those circumstances, to say, okay, look, we're going to have to waive a good portion of this. It has to be realistic, you know, for you to be able to survive under the payment system we're going to set up. Today, do we have those kind of abilities when we see a set of circumstances, particularly with that person that is just kind of innocently caught outside? Gee, I didn't think about paying. I don't know how you do that. Mm-hmm. But he had not actually thought about actually going in and filing.
Mr. Chair, Senator George, thank you for sharing that, because that really was what I wanted to say in response to the absolute elimination of our discretion. There will be those cases. You will have constituents coming to you saying, the department is after me. I didn't understand. I didn't know about an amnesty period. I haven't filed, and now they want 100% penalty because I haven't filed for 3 years, plus a 25% penalty for not taking advantage of the amnesty period. And there may be good cause for us to say, all right, in this case, we can waive part of that, but if our hands are tied, we can't even look at that. So that's another thing to think about in eliminating our discretion. Do you want to do that absolutely, or give us a little bit of leeway?
So perhaps, Senator George, on that is, because that seems compelling to me, too, mm-hmm. Is that, and Deborah, I don't know if you could work with Senator George and Dexter to get language that would take into account situations like that, so that even for the set time period that we have, where we're considering taking away some of the discretion, we still leave open, because I would want that ability for that individual to, I wouldn't want DOR's hands to be completely tied where we have this program in place, but then you have these cases like that fella.
Be devastating, absolutely devastating that fella.
Yeah, so if I don't know how you craft it, but if you could work with Senator George's office to put some language in there. And again, just what we're doing is we'll bring this back. We're just trying to get a draft, and we'll have a public hearing on it, but we're trying to get an omnibus draft of this issue, and then we'll bring it back. But if you'd be willing, Senator George, to work with the department to get some at least wiggle room on that discretion for those cases. Paul.
Mr. Chair, another area where you can provide some help to people that have big back taxes is, if you look under the amnesty period, there's a filing period, but recall in the California program, you have to file in that period that you're in the program, but then you can work out an installment payment program. So you don't have to pay in that period, but you have to come to some agreement with the department over what your installment payments are going to be and what the period of time they'll be. So that's kind of another little area where you can give some flexibility to people that have piled up big deals.
On the abusive tax shelters issue, would the committee be comfortable for our starting point to just use 2486, that language, as our starting point for the issue, and then we can come back and go through the language that Dexter puts in there? but use that bill as our language that we would use on the tax shelter and compliance issue.
Great.
And my understanding, Mr. Chair, that's very closely tied to the California program, or is there?
Mr. Chair and Paul, in concept it is, because of the way California drafts its statutes, and because after the California Voluntary Compliance Initiative was passed, Congress changed a lot of the federal laws that program connected to. It's certainly, if you were to do a line-by-line comparison, they don't look the same at all. So I think it's in concept similar, but it's not exactly the same.
Not exactly the same. And they're, I think we're learning something from the California program that we might want to alter ours. So at least for me, this provides, that language will give us a real starting point to work through, and whether we need to tweak it. We'll obviously have to return to this when Dexter finds time in his busy schedule to draft this more omnibus 2364. So on the question of tax years, Paul, what are our choices that we have before us in terms of tax years?
Well, Mr. Chair, you can look at number of back years to go to that are eligible. Deborah talked about statute of limitations, how many years they can go back under current law. So you may want to make some adjustment there. We saw how particularly under a VCI type program, California went back 8 years. So you may want to go back a further time, particularly if you want to capture that period of high capital gains and when these programs were in the highest growth phase. So that's something to consider. The other issue there is linked to future returns. Recall how under California's current amnesty program, you come in and sign up for your amnesty, and you know your penalties and interests are waived, but you also have to agree to pay 05 and 06, file those two future years as well. So that can be an element too. Once you're in the system, you've got to stay in, or you have the potential of losing some of those benefits.
I like that. Mm-hmm. I like the idea that there's the carrot to stay with us. Well, committee, how does 10 years and the 0506 language sound as starting points in terms of tax years?
And my reaction is, if you have a situation in which it appears that this person has a pattern of evading taxes, I would go back as far as we could. I mean, it's going to come into the balance factor. What are they capable of recovering today to pay? But I think, you know, as long as we have that discretion for them to make an adjustment on it, saying, well, we don't want to eliminate the person from being able to continue, for example, doing business in Oregon. Exactly. But at the same time, there's actually a clear message set that, you know, that we're from this point on saying that you better abide by the law, and because we would be able to go back and recover.
That's where I think you have to have some. I'm glad you're working on the discretionary language, but there has to be, even though we'll set it in place, there needs to be some level of discretion to allow them to continue to do business next year.
Mr. Chair, a question. There may be a reason for keeping the VCI program and the general amnesty program separate in terms of number of years going back. The VCI program is for sophisticated taxpayers who they're not. It's not that they're not filing; it's that they're manipulating things in such a way so that it appears that they do not have income, and that's a different situation from, for example, the case Senator George was talking about. And perhaps one of the areas in which they might be different is in the number of years you go back. I believe California is. Goes back 8 years under the voluntary compliance, but does not have a special a change in the law in terms of their general amnesty program.
That's a good point. It seems to me you'd want to go back on the VCI, and I'm not sure on the amnesty if there's a rationale for really looking back because of the lack of sophistication. Committee. Done.
So on the BCI would be the one that we'd have to look back and the general amnesty. Okay. Carrots. Paul Warner.
Mr. Chair, there are, I just have listed there the things that have come up in discussion. Obviously, the penalties, increase in the penalties following the amnesty period would be one way to send in terms of carrots, you can waive the penalties that have accrued for those back taxes. You can waive interest or both. So that becomes, or in, when you were talking about earlier about this kind of two-tiered system, you can treat taxpayers differently by different categories where you waive penalties for one group and penalties and interest for the other group, particularly your non-filers that you're trying to, as Senator George says, trying to smoke out. And that may be an additional inducement to do that. Now, to me, it's not clear in terms of civil penalties what discretion there is. Maybe Dexter can comment on that if there's flexibility there. The other issue on the disclosure agreements would be my thinking there in particular is with the IRS, if there could be some disclosure agreement in terms of what the department will divulge and disclose to other agencies, and I'm not sure if there's a legal flexibility there. And the last issue I put down was appeal rights, which is an issue in terms of the California VCI, where there's been a number of taxpayers have come forward but retained their appeal rights. I remember we were questioning whether how much of those dollars will actually stay in the California Department of Finance and how much will have to be refunded back. Mm-hmm. If you look at most amnesty programs, including the LC you have, once you've gone into a regular amnesty program, you've settled on that, that's it. I mean, you can't come back and ask for a refund on what you paid. Mm-hmm. You basically reach an agreement and it's settled. But the VCI program had this appeal process where, you could try to reduce your risk by filing now and then coming back later and making your case.
Okay. So what the issue I had with the California program is it seemed to be heavily weighted towards the sticks and lightly weighted towards the carrots. And Senator Brzezinski and Senator George, you were talking about perhaps a two-tiered penalty. I've always thought that you would have there would still be some interest because then that gets at the whole issue of, well, I file every year, and why am I not, what's the incentive for me not to just wait for the next amnesty program to roll around? So I always thought that there'd be at least some level of interest and penalty. It would just be dramatically reduced from what the high penalties and interest that we have, and perhaps then when we get down to the sticks, it goes dramatically up at the point that you've not responded to the carrots that we've put out there, which would be different from California, which kind of leads with a few more sticks and a few less carrots. Any thoughts on proper levels of waiving of penalties and interest, where that medium ground would be? I would certainly welcome. Yeah. Senator George, sure. Senator Brzezinski.
I think we're really going to be dependent on them to tell us, okay, what do you think the levels are? Deborah, where you folks are working with us every day, I really think the positive carrot aspect with that big stick at the end, very similar to what you're describing, is the best way to handle this. I mean, first of all, we're talking about the fact we're going to go out and advertise that we're doing this. You know, the newspaper probably had reports today in it and haven't looked at it yet. But at the so there's going to be a lot of discussion out there about this issue. And the main thing we're after is to get everybody who is supposed to be paying to be paying. And sometimes that may mean that you have to just come in real easy, giving them an opportunity to comply, and then getting them on the straight and narrow direction here with the idea that if you don't do that, I mean, there's some real serious penalties going to be coming. But that's really going to be, to me, up to them to tell us what that level is that is going to be effective. We had, those experts who came in yesterday, a lot of background there and what works and what doesn't work. One of the things that seems apparent to me is that we better have the ability to go in there and be able to fairly compete in analyzing what information is presented. I don't know how many additional auditors we're talking about putting in here, but it looks to me like that it may require some upstaffing to substantial upstaffing to be able to, you know, to deal with it at first. I think the thing that has to work once we put it in place. In other words, we've got to be able to meet their demand, but at the same time be able to do the investigation. Mm-hmm. That's kind of rambling, wasn't it? Sorry about that.
No, actually, I mean, that is actually philosophically where I find myself is different from the California. I would like our program to have that incentive out there and be, I guess, more customer friendly in the outset. Senator Brzezinski.
I would echo what Senator George said. I think certified smart people at Revenue are the ones that need to give us that guidance. I assume that they would do some review as to what other states have done and come up with those numbers. I mean, for us to try to figure that out, I think it's pretty arbitrary.
Good point.
So one final point. When we were at Pacific Conference, there was an interesting graph, and one of them was what will people normally accept paid, and there's a certain level of taxation. If you go above it, you get evasion and you get all kinds of things and protests and all that sort of thing. If you go below it, people normally assume that isn't adequate to sustain government. But the point of that was is that we probably have a level here as far as incentives and penalties that will in fact yield the most money. In other words, most compliance.
Where those two,
So if there's any way to analyze that, you know, this state did this and it yielded this percentage as compared to another state that maybe took a more a carrot approach and a heavy stick at the end, like what I'm thinking about, it would be interesting to measure which program actually worked. When we had the revenue numbers, you know, with the lottery, I found it kind of interesting that they had to adjust the payouts in order to sustain, you know, the people that were participating. The same concepts of how people react to a plan that yields the most compliance and the most revenue, to me, would be a way to look at it. And I can't do that.
Other thoughts on this? Deborah, can you go huddle with your folks and get some language to Dexter that fits? You've heard the discussion, and Dexter, you've heard it, of kind of where the thought is that we would have a system that doesn't completely waive, obviously, interest and penalties, but really leads with some incentives, and then this handles at least most of the stick conversation also. But then, obviously, has that stick there if needed towards the tail end of someone deciding not to participate after we've invited them to Dexter and then
Sure. Quick question: would the having kind of a positive incentive at the beginning? Would you want that framed in terms of department discretion, or having it in the statute actually that there is that the statute would not provide for penalties or interest, or provide for penalties and interest, but then grant the department considerable discretion, so it wouldn't have to be necessarily a finding of good cause, but mm-hmm. Pretty much leave it wide open to them.
Mm-hmm. My feeling on that is that you have to put into statute some language, because you're going to advertise this program, you're going to, for lack of a better word, sell it to the public. And so there needs to be that definition of really what the legislative intent was, not just the discretion of the department, but what the intent was for, and set it down in terms of those interest and penalties. Then, not considerable discretion, but whatever Senator George and Ms. Buchanan work out in terms of allowing for those cases like your mm-hmm. employee with the pickup. At least I would like some wiggle room there, so that you have an individual who really doesn't know the tax mm-hmm. system yet, and I think the department has to have some level of discretion. I don't know. I mean, I was thinking, but I'll let y'all work it out. Maybe you have the director of the department have some entree into this. I don't know if that puts too many cases right up to the director's office, but some level, something like that.
Mr. Chair, but that would be the discretion at the end of the program to avoid the big stick, if there are grounds, because otherwise it will be an economic disaster. But what I'm talking about is actually at the beginning. Would you want the program modeled so that there's in the statute there's no penalties, and it's kind of a very positive carrot approach at the beginning, or do you want there to be penalties there, but grant the department a lot of discretion to waive those penalties that are there at the beginning.
Hmm.
We don't need an answer to that right now, but I'm just throwing that out as an issue.
My thought on it is, and I hate to punt this to Ms. Buchanan, but hearing the spirit of the conversation that we had of would like to lead with those carrots and maybe there's some penalties. If you could bring us something, I mean, we're going to obviously have this bill back before us after it gets done being completely drafted, and we'll have another discussion of these issues in public comment. But if you could bring us something to Dexter that kind of fits that what you've heard, the flavor of what you've heard in terms of the whole interest and penalty issue, I've heard what I'm hearing is there's a comfort level from this committee to punt that to you. And then obviously we may tee it up again to mix my sports metaphors and have it change it around. Dexter, I don't know if that's does that work?
Sure.
Paul.
So, Mr. Chair, there's the other issues there as well. One of the things that California emphasized in their literature for taxpayers is that you're free of most penalties and fees and interest and without fear of criminal prosecution. So that would be an element, too, to think about in terms of at least how that could be a potential carrot. And the other issue, the disclosure agreements, we've talked about, for most taxpayers, if they haven't filed in Oregon, they probably haven't filed a federal return, and they probably owe the feds about three times what they owe the state. So that I'm not sure what kind of flexibility the department would have in terms of that. The department has agreements with the Internal Revenue Service to share data. So whether that's something that could be potentially part of this or not, it seems to me that could have a significant effect on people coming forward if there's a way in which they would feel more that this information would stay with the Department of Revenue. And then the other issue on appeal rights, you're going to get, a lot more people, particularly on a VCI, you're going to get a lot more dollars coming in. Then the question would be if they would stay there.
So let's take those one at a time. The whole issue of you will not be criminally prosecuted if you come in. Committee, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I vote aye on that one because I think that's got to be a key, is that, okay, I made a mistake, or maybe it was intentional, but now I know where I am, and I'm not going to violate the law any longer. To be able to bring them into the system, I think, has been a little bit of incentive there to say, we'll forgive it up to this point.
You're not going to go before a judge. I think Senator Starr agreeing with that sentiment. Senator Brzezinski?
I'm contemplating that. I guess the only thing I'm wondering is, this would apply to people who the department has no knowledge of, as compared to someone that may be aware of.
Correct. I mean, we did talk about the two tiers.
I want to make sure I'm grasping this because, I mean, as much as we want to give the department discretion to be able to handle these flexibility on some of these issues, if there's someone out there that's very extremely egregious that we've been trying to work with, I don't want them to be able to skate.
And have no...
If that's appropriate. But it sounds to me that we're talking about people who we have no knowledge of.
But at this point, would they, on the criminal prosecution part, because I would be fine with no criminal prosecution if they comply completely and kind of true up and agree to this 0506 language where they're coming back into the system. They've had some issues, but they're coming back, they're truing themselves up, and they're agreeing to true up for the future years. At that point, I'm comfortable with no criminal prosecution because they're kind of meeting all the expectations we've set out there.
We're getting money.
And they're. I mean, I think it's a nice gesture to sure give them the assurance that if I do these things, I'm good. I'm not no longer. So I mean, as long as they meet those three tests for me, then that department maybe we could be blind to something.
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Brzezinski, I understood this to apply the amnesty to people that we don't know about, so the non-filers, or those who have filed but underreported their income. and that it wouldn't necessarily be available to those that we have tried, we have had to track down and determine the tax and issue a notice of assessment, and they are not paying and they are not cooperating. I understood that those would be left out of the amnesty, and maybe I misunderstood, but I think that would get to the people that are just hardcore.
Right. And I just want to, I guess on the record, make sure that's where we're at.
That's my understanding.
Okay.
Senator George.
Well, I think that's the perfect example. If we have publicity at the same time this amnesty thing is going out that we are aggressively pursuing those that we have knowledge of, well, does that put an incentive on the person that may have not been in compliance to get right now because we're coming up on you? We're coming up behind you. The other thing is that there's no question there's an advantage for us in the long term, because if I see a person, when I look and have to forgive, you know, this due amount, and they have not been participating honestly in the system, once I see that, there's going to be a red flag on that account, on that individual. I would watch, or that corporation, I would track them from then on to make sure that those were that they were remaining compliant and honest with their taxes. So I think there's a lot of things for us to gain in the long term, as far as, first of all, establishing the character of a company or of an individual, and then being able to utilize that in the future as to maybe when you might want to do an audit. At the same time, you're not going to get them into the system if there isn't a substantial incentive up front. They've been able to get away with it up to this point. But the knowledge that you're pursuing some right now who won't be able to benefit, and at the same time a substantial carrot, I think has rewards in the long term relative to getting them into the system and being able to track somebody who may have a tendency to want to be on the edge.
Other thoughts on this, Senator Starr?
Well, I Gary expressed it very well. We're dealing with a pretty broad array of tax avoiders. But I think that the way Gary has expressed that pretty well covers the issue.
On the disclosure, what latitude do we have in terms of disclosure to the federal government?
Mr. Chair, I don't know the answer to that question. I don't know what the terms of our agreements with the IRS are, and whether if we said we're not going to give you information about this group of taxpayers, whether that would jeopardize that agreement. So I would have to get back to you.
Can you look into that? Is that even an option for us to make this an Oregon-only program? If it is, that's something we should consider, and certainly how we advertise it if we did go that route. But this is just Oregonians talking to Oregonians.
Mr. Chair, if I might, on the disclosure, a separate question is the disclosure with other states. And we talked about that a little bit yesterday, getting information from California on their VCI program and taxpayers down there. Maybe it would be taken care of in the statute of limitations language if we extended that to 10 years. But I think you would want to think about our ability to make adjustments when we get information from the other states, not just on audits that we do.
That sounds very reasonable in terms of state to state. On the issue of appeal rights, that's kind of a tough issue. I don't know, Paul, if you want to weigh in on this. I can see both sides. You want to get the appeal there, but then in some ways the other states have done this. I think of South Carolina, and not having that appeals is also valuable, because it really just sets the program in place and it's clearly defined.
Mr. Chair, I do think there's a link here on the for the abusive tax shelters on how you define it and how well you if you define that very clearly, and so that there's some, you know, very close link with IRS code, for example, and there's a clear understanding of what's included and what's not, I think your appeal rights become less of an issue. If it's more broadly defined and taxpayers are uncertain, then I think the appeal rights may make more sense.
Hmm. Do you have any learned recommendation in those two? I mean, to me, it's more attractive, clearly defined, where folks really know what the program is, very clear that accountants can talk to them, and then lessen on the appeal rights, but I'm open.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Senator.
If you got a deal, it's a deal, and you ought to abide by it. And I have a little problem with appealing after you've already agreed to do something. And so I know there's going to be a balance factor on that one, too. But just philosophically, I don't like the idea of a person cutting the deal. We give them the benefit, and then they come back and, you know, want to drag you back to even further lack of payment.
Yeah, and the cost of litigation. I mean, I could see how you would just have a tremendous leakage in terms of litigating all the state's attorneys and private attorneys. Well, perhaps that's at least for our initial stab at this. We'll go with clearly defined, and maybe that solves a lot of appeal issues. Paul, did we cover most of the sticks? By asking the department, I mean, I know we have the question of public listing. I like the testimony we had yesterday in terms of the website, since they're already public. I like the idea of having that, but also giving the option of anonymity. I think Mr. Roach yesterday had that proposal, which sounded very good to me, of giving the option of anonymity first and then the website, sticking with that carrot and stick of someone would not be on the department's website that would be created if they come into the program, but then the stick is, yeah, then they would be listed at some point. Committee, I don't know your thoughts on that testimony or that proposal. Hearing nothing, so ordered. What else do we have? Are we covered most of the ground here? I mean,
I listed that enhanced future enforcement, and that's probably more appropriate a ways and means question in terms of the budget and that they're working on now. But there may be ways in which that message could be sent as well in a post-amnesty period. There would be an enhanced Department of Revenue budget. Ms. Weiser talked about using more audits, direct and random audits, those kinds of things that may end up sending a clearer message. But, of course, those would have a fiscal impact. But that might be something that would be part of that post-amnesty period stick.
Okay. Senator Dorsch.
Paul, help me with this, because some of those amnesties seemed a little short to me. I mean, I think there's a and my thought was a little bit longer, but at the end, boy, there's some absolute things are going to happen. We are going to be doing enhanced auditing, and because we will staff up to do even the examination of particularly new folks that are coming in, or if it in fact is tax shelter type issues, we'll staff up for that. The idea being that, you know, right now it's the time to do it, because after this it's going to be a new day in Oregon, and tax compliance will be something we expect.
I think that has, to the extent that is very clear and very credible, I think it would have a significant effect on the amount of people that come forward. The period, I mean, most of the time periods you look at usually tend to be about 60 days. Now, the VCI, I think, is a longer one, and in the bill that you talked about yesterday, well, it was 6 months. From January 1 to July 1. So that may be a little bit longer period, but usually it's 60 to 90 days. And then at the end of that period, then those increased penalties and potentially increased interest go into effect. For example, California has a 50% additional interest on what they call an amnesty penalty, on the amount of penalties and interest that in back taxes you would have owed, you add another 50%. So those kinds of elements could have a significant effect.
Senator George, please.
Is there any reason it wouldn't be way longer than that? You know, a year and a half. I mean, for it to percolate through the state, that this is the time now to get right.
Mr. Chair, Senator George, one thing you might consider is setting a one-year period, but then authorizing the department to determine within that year what an appropriate amnesty time would be. That would give us the flexibility to set the time during the year. One problem would be running an amnesty during our filing season.
Right.
Could be difficult. So if we were able to schedule it for summer, for example, or later in the fall and work during that one-year period to set the appropriate time, that might be helpful. I don't know whether a one-year amnesty period would gain much more than, say, a four-month period. I just don't know. It seems from what I have seen that people wait until the last minute.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what you might see coming in early in that process versus what a four-month or a three-month period would give you.
Perhaps on that, we could marry those two issues, because I was going to ask for you to help us maybe do a survey of some of the states when they roll this out, because it's on in terms of the whole how will taxpayers know and the publicity and professional organizations and that question.
Mm-hmm.
Really like to know how other states have rolled out their programs and how we might learn from the best practices of informing citizens about it. And then we could set legislatively the date around that in the time period, but we'd want to do that in statute rather than just keep punting it to the department. Paul, are we missing anything, or are we prepared to let Dexter go back to his office? And
that last question, Mr. Chair, is on your draft. It just says the department shall publicize the tax amnesty program so as to maximize public awareness and participation. So, but at that, you know, it's pretty much up to the department. So that seems to me that would be a key issue for you to decide if you want to be more specific than that,
mm-hmm.
in terms of what you want them to do, and that may be something.
Well, I'm going to talk to the Ways and Means folks both about agents, compensation, some of the issues that mm-hmm. Senator George and I have discussed, and then if there's, and I would certainly welcome any input from anyone and the department in terms of how to best publicize, because I don't like that language that just says,
mm-hmm.
go make this very public. I think there's got to be a better way to do that with more specificity than just everyone needs to know about this. Other comments for the betterment? Good. Do we need any whistleblower language, or is that completely separate, Bill?
Well, I would love to build in incentives for anyone that, I mean, if we don't get compliance out of this, I think there would be something there that would provide incentives for the person who might have knowledge to, and you know, properly inform. But where are we right now? I mean, is there any program that says for the percentage of recovery, there is an actual cash incentive to do this? I want to be real careful, because I don't want a 1984 scenario, you know, where everybody's reporting on everyone. But at the same time, you know, there are times in which, you know, we take a look at some of the things that we've seen over the last 5 years where companies were totally out of control when it came to the legitimacy of their books. And for the person that comes forward, I think there should be an incentive for them to do that. And there should be protections in place, too. The bill we're working on, and what we basically asked for is given the maximum protection to a whistleblower, particularly within government, anybody who might be able to come forward, then that's what we're talking about. But on the outside, I don't know, criminal penalties for anyone that would pursue someone. I have no idea what the balance is here. But
I like the spirit of some incentive for whether it's an employee of government or a citizen, that if they see something that is egregious, and you're right, I agree with you, you want to make it tight because you don't want this, but that there'd be some incentive in place for someone, both in the protection side and perhaps monetarily, mm-hmm. That if they see something that is just really outside the bounds, I mean, we talked about the hero at Enron, I think her name was Sharon Watkins, but for an individual like that, that just sees things that folks ought to know about, some protections and some monetary, so again, punting that to the department, if there are things that would be tight and reasonable,
mm-hmm.
I'd certainly entertain language in that round. And I think it's actually, Senator George, a really good idea to include some sort of incentive for a citizen or an employee. Dexter, anything that we've missed? Have we been clear enough?
I'm sure I'll come up with something, Mr. Chair, but I can't think of anything right now.
Great. Deborah, Paul. Good.
Paul. Mr. Chair, what we'll do is, the three of us will get together and go through what the committee has discussed, and then we'll come back when this, when the bill comes back to the committee, and we'll kind of lay this out as at least as our interpretation of kind of where the committee is on these issues, and then you can have a chance to go back through those and further refine your decision.
Yeah, that is perfect. Well, thank you for your time. So, Senator Metzger, just to catch you up, we had a couple days of hearings on this whole compliance collections issue. What we've done today is we have a vehicle, which is a committee bill, which we're just marking up here. We'll bring this back as soon as Dexter allows us to, knowing that he's got a million other things on his desk. We'll bring this back up for another public hearing and then possible work session when that time arrives. Close the work session on LC 2364. And now we're going to do the three bills that we have for the day. But before that committee, Ms. Gardino, our committee administrator, her son has just been promoted to captain. He had served in Iraq. He's a Marine. We're getting an article that was just in the paper about him. He lives, I believe, in Virginia. But has just been promoted to captain and has served the country in Iraq in the Green Zone, and just kind of a special day for Ms. Gardino and her son. And we'll distribute copies of this newspaper article that that was done on your son.
Thank you.
Great.
Thank
you. Open a public hearing on Senate Bill 31. Liz Beth.
Good morning, Senator Deckard and committee members. I'll just briefly go through Senate Bill 31. These are all the Department of Revenue bills that you're going to be hearing here. They're all pretty innocuous, and it's really not big revenue bills whatsoever as far as impacts and things. But basically, this first one is dealing with the Department of Revenue's authority to basically include other members of a lawsuit, basically with an officer, an employee who is liable for payment of withholding of the personal income taxes. So basically it's granting then when the case is before the Oregon Tax Court, the authority to determine if additional individuals are liable then for those unpaid withholding taxes during the appeals process. And what happens is if there's an earlier determination by the Department of Revenue of one person being liable, well, what may happen during the court proceedings is there could be a new information that's brought forward. Well, at that time, they have to adhere to this earlier decision from the Department of Revenue of who they thought was actually liable for these unpaid withholding taxes. So this is just giving more discretion for the Department of Revenue to be able to add other people and other employees for this unpaid taxes. So it applies to all those appeals that are taken to Oregon Tax Court after the effective date of this measure. So basically this isn't at all anticipating much of a collection or additional penalties or taxes that would actually be collected, but there just may be certain cases in which the Department of Revenue may lose this case just due to who they thought initially was the one who was responsible for not paying these taxes versus who actually ended up being the one that the court found to be responsible for not paying these taxes.
Patrick Allen. Oh, I got 32 before me. Anyone on 31?
I got a question.
Oh, good.
So who would answer that question?
Deborah would be our...
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Deborah Buchanan, Department of Revenue.
Mr. Chair, my question was, it just seems unusual to me that, and I looked at your example of this with Officer A and Officer B, but it would seem to me how things normally work in a case like this, if you feel that someone has been has not been, in this particular case, paying withholdings. That usually, since you are jointly and severally liable, usually they're all named in most type of proceedings, aren't they? Until you figure out exactly who's responsible. So I'm just curious, so if you could explain to me, generally that's what happens. The net grabs everybody, and then you have to excuse yourself as opposed to the other way around. And I'm just curious as to if that isn't generally done in tax court situations. Or
Mr. Chair, Senator Metzger, I think you're absolutely right. That would be the normal process. I believe what happened here is that our attorneys identified a particular case where we had determined one officer to be liable. That person had appealed, and we didn't have information about another person who could have been held liable. So when that information came out in tax court, we weren't able to pull them into the process. But typically, you're right. If we know about the people in the conference proceeding, we would include all of them. This would just allow for the alternative to this would be that we go back and start our process over with that person that's now identified as potentially liable and go through the whole process again instead of pulling them all into the court proceeding. Okay. But you are correct. In the typical scenario, that's how it would work.
Okay. Thank you.
Senator George.
Thank you. I just wanted to comment on the fact that I've learned a new word through this process. Implead.
Yeah.
Implead means to sue, and I didn't even know that. Thank you for bringing us to
right before you implode.
That's true. We might have to weave that into our lexicon, the impleading of our frivolous impleadments, junk impleadments. Anything further on Senate Bill 3-1?
Thanks, Deborah. Closed hearing on Senate Bill 31, open work session on Senate Bill 31.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Starr.
I move Senate Bill 31 to the floor for due pass recommendation.
Senator Starr has impleaded us to move Senate Bill 31 to the floor with a due pass recommendation discussion. Any objection to that motion? So we order. Senator Starr, if you could carry and let our other colleagues know that we've discovered a new word in this committee. When you carry that, that's good. Open public hearing. Senate Bill 3-2. Lizbeth.
Chairman Decker, what this bill does is you've already kind of heard from the discussions earlier today about the Department of Revenue's discretion to basically waive penalties and interest for good and sufficient cause. So basically that's what we're talking about here, is this is now basically adding some additional language about exactly how the Department of Revenue will have the authority to establish rules to waive those. In this case, it'll just be penalties. So we're leaving interest alone. They still have interest that can be waived, but this is dealing with penalties. So the penalties will be allowed to be waived on taxpayers for good and sufficient cause that results due to an incident being the first offense for the taxpayer. So that really gets to Senator George's example. So this is really trying to address some of those issues the Department of Revenue has seen come forward in which the taxpayers may not fit into the category of good and sufficient cause. And so then they think this additional language will help them then to be able to identify those first offense filers who maybe just didn't know about the tax law itself. And then it's specifying the guidelines required by the new administrative rule for waiving the penalties for good and sufficient cause. And then they also have another example in there of just the if the actions of the department ensures long-term effectiveness, efficiency or administration of the tax system. So that's just kind of broad language there that I'm sure Deborah will discuss as far as what they were thinking. But this won't have much of a revenue impact. Maybe a few more penalties would be waived, but it's going to be minimal each year, so the revenue impact is really minimal.
Mm-hmm. So, Deborah, the natural question on that is how does this sync with our just prior discussion? I mean, this really is George's employees' case. First time, but we had this long discussion on this for the other bill. How does this sync with that discussion?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Deborah Buchanan, Department of Revenue. Mr. Chair, this could go a long way to getting to Senator George's situation. I don't know if he would be comfortable with something like this or whether he would want to see it expanded in the statute itself. This would allow for waiver of first-time offenses even if there is no good and sufficient cause. So a person who simply makes a mistake, maybe they've been filing for 20 years and all of a sudden they missed the deadline 1 year and asked for a waiver, we'd be able to do that. I think where Senator George's example might come in is if this were built into an amnesty program, that we look at this and develop rules under the long-term effectiveness, and it might fit there that you have an amnesty program, you forgive penalties for this period of time. After that, the penalties aren't waived except for situations like that.
That would do it.
Yeah, I mean, my only concern is that you were going to draft language that would give you, I mean, I would think it would be similar to this type of language for that prior bill, that would give you some ability to take into account cases like Senator George's employee. And so I don't know if that deems Senate Bill 32 that we don't need it, or because you were going to work on language that gave the department some discretion to take those situations into account, and this would obviously provide that kind of discretion.
Mr. Chair, I think it's going to depend on how your amnesty penalty provisions are drafted for the period following the amnesty and what type of hammer you put in there as to whether or not this would fit with it or not. I guess my concern is if you say we're going to eliminate the department's discretion after this amnesty period, how far does that elimination go, and then what type of penalties do you want to apply after that? I'm not saying this very well at all, but I think maybe I need to work with Senator George to see whether this gets to where he wants to go and compare it to what Dexter comes up with in the draft LC.
Yeah, I just don't want to pass two bills that do similar things right, but different language, because you've got a broader issue on the prior bill and you have a specific issue here. So perhaps we can meld them together. It would be my interest to, I like the idea of you've got this first-time person that perhaps just, I'd like to be able to look at the circumstances of this individual and say, should have known, should have filed, but didn't, but we're not going to, the hammer's not coming down because we don't want to throw it. I think that was a good example.
And in debtor's prison.
That's right, yeah. Other questions or comments? Patrick Allen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Patrick Allen, I manage the Office of Regulatory Streamlining. Just very briefly wanted to identify this as one of the bills we're following as a regulatory streamlining bill. It's part of a package I think we've previously shared with you of about 36 bills that range from big changes in state policy to small improvements in regulatory processes. As the administrator identified for you, this is probably more at the small end, but we think by virtue of lots of small changes, we can positively impact the state's business climate, and would encourage your support for this bill in that context as well.
Great. Thanks for the brief testimony. Questions for Mr. Allen or Ms. Buchanan? Thank you. Close the public hearing on Senate Bill 32. We'll hang on to that one. Just work in concert with our prior bill and open a public hearing on the last bill of our day, which is Senate Bill 33. Opening hearing, was that?
Chairman, Deputy, and Committee members. Now, Senate Bill 33, this is talking about the delinquency penalties, okay? So this is, you were asking, somewhat earlier about what were the penalties under current law. Well, this is dealing with that. And this is the first initial penalty. This is basically for the penalty for taxpayers who fail to file a report or return or pay the tax on time. The Department of Revenue shall assess, to begin with, a 5% penalty. Now, that grows as time goes on, and that's all written here in the statute and stuff. But basically, we're dealing initially with the 5% delinquency penalty on the amount of unpaid tax owed. This basically is just clarifying in law, just because kind of the way the bill was written, or way the statute is written, the 5% penalty is supposed to be on the amount of tax that is actually reported on the return. Well, that may not be the amount they actually owe. Mm-hmm. So then this is just kind of clarifying that the 5% delinquency penalty shall be on the amount of unpaid tax owed. Then it also clarifying that the Department of Revenue shall accept a notice of tax deficiency as a reason for not imposing a delinquency penalty of 5%. And Deborah, has already discussed kind of when they will issue these notices of tax delinquencies. or deficiencies. And then this is all going to take effect 90 days after the end of the 2005 legislative session. So again, this act is not going to have a real big change at all. And this, you know, changing this 5% of the unpaid tax owed in most cases will probably be something that will raise the amount of penalties slightly. But, you know, there could be examples where it could lower the penalties also. So it's going to have a real minimal impact, less than $50,000 each year again on this bill.
Thank you. Ms. Buchanan.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Deborah Buchanan, Department of Revenue. Mr. Chair, we've just identified two groups of taxpayers that seem to be similarly situated but are treated differently under the penalty provisions. A taxpayer who files their return showing tax to pay but can't pay it is subject to a 5% penalty. The person who files the return and receives an adjustment, a billing for additional tax, does not have that 5% penalty applied, even though they don't appeal that adjustment and even though they don't pay it. So the question for you as a policy matter is, do you think that 5% penalty should be applied to both groups evenly? Those that don't pay their tax when it is due would have a 5% penalty. And the other piece of it is to clarify a change that was made in 1995 that we think was inadvertent. The drafting was to make the statute easier to read by providing that if there's a failure to file or a failure to pay, you're subject to a 5% penalty. We have always administered that similar to the federal provisions, that if both of those should apply, there's only one 5% penalty. And that's how we have always administered it. It's not entirely clear, so this is clarifying that is the result. You get just one 5%, even though you may have failed to file and failed to pay. And I did attach an extract from the 95 bill that made that change. So I believe I did.
Thank you. Questions? Do you see conflict with the prior discussion? As I look at these, I just want to ensure that we don't pass bills that are conflicting with the LC that we were just working on.
Mr. Chair, I don't see a conflict with that earlier discussion. Okay.
Okay. I don't see a problem with it. I think okay.
It seems fair. I mean, it seems you should treat folks who are in the same boat the same, and these folks seem to be in the same boat. Closed public hearing, open work session on Senate Bill 33.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Starr.
Move Senate Bill 33 to the floor with the B-class recommendation.
Senator Starr has moved Senate Bill 33 to the floor with a B-class recommendation discussion. Any objection to that motion? So ordered. Senator George, would you like to carry that bill? Mm-hmm. We're done for the week. Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Cannon. Thank you to the folks who've been with us all week. Committee, I appreciate all the hard work and the long testimony we had the previous 2 days, and we'll come back to this in a week or so. With that, we are adjourned to 8:30 Monday morning. Have a good weekend.